Hey, it's Don Coscarelli, filmmaker. I just wrote a book. Check it out. It's called Fiction, Tales from the World of Phantasm. And it can teach you all the things that you never knew about the Phantasm film series. A lot of interesting stuff. Horror, violence, not much sex. Check it out. Now available on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle.
This is The Gala Show. I'm your reporter on the beat, Gala Avery. On this episode, you may know my guest as one of the managers of the New Beverly Cinema, an avid Dodgers fan, or even as the guy behind those amazing monthly New Beverly sneak peek videos. But here on The Gala Show, I know him as the one guy that can get me more hype than anybody to go see a movie at the Bev, Jeff Smith. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Gala. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Speaking of the October calendar just came out while mm-hmm. we're recording, but the trailer for October, oh my God.
It's bangers all month long,
it
you know?
It is. The horror fans are sure to be happy.
Yeah. It's always fun. Like, you know, it's always a little bit of a challenge, but October was fun to cut because you at least have somewhat of a guiding theme to kind of help you
horror.
Along. Like, okay, it's October, horror, scary stuff. That's at least a good kind of jumping yeah. off point for, you know, the kind of clips you're going to use and, you know, the tone you're trying to set. But yeah, no, I mean.
It was a great one.
Thank you. I appreciate it. October at the month is all, you know, one might say the most anticipated month of the entire calendar year.
I for
so
sure know it is.
It's yeah. October always brings the goods, you know, and this year's no exception. So no, we're all pretty pumped.
I can't wait to be in the theater.
Right on.
Before we bring up the topic for today, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You and I have chatted a little bit about seeing movies in theaters as mm-hmm. opposed to at home and mm-hmm. why the crowd is so important. I definitely have my own favorite movie memories, but to be honest, a lot of them revolve around just seeing things on TV with my dad.
Uh-huh.
So I have to ask you, what was your favorite movie-going experience, and what made that experience so memorable for you?
Man, favorite movie-going experience. It's hard to say, and like I said, I mean, you can have a great experience anywhere. Like you said, I've had tons of memorable experiences just, you know, watching stuff at home, either with family or friends or that sort of thing. But I don't know, if I were to hone in on one. Again, I think there's a lot of examples I could give, but just off the top of my head, I mean, you know, the New Beverly. I'm not just drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, I was a I was a super fan even before I started working there. But one of if not my favorite New Beverly movie going experiences was when we played Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
We played it a number of times, but it was for the first time. I believe since Prince had passed in 2016,
oh, wow.
maybe a few months later.
So the real fans and probably came out.
Completely. And there was just kind of an electricity in the auditorium that I'd like never really felt before. You know, everyone was just really dialed in. By the end, obviously, you know, you get all that great music. I mean, the music throughout, obviously, but like, I'm trying to remember the order, the back-to-back. You know, you get like Purple Rain, I Would Die For You. You know, and then, you know, Baby, I'm a Star. And people, yeah. you know, not in like a forced performative sort of way. Everyone kind of genuinely started. You could feel like clapping, stomping their feet, you know, singing along,
oh,
that sort of
so
thing.
Excited. Wow.
And yeah, and it was just, like I said, not in a performative way. It was all very genuine. And, you know, you left like floating out of the theater, you know,
wow.
like as if you had attended the greatest concert, you know, of your entire life. And in a way you had, you know, and I was just like, oh my God. And I do have, you know, Purple Rain on, you know, Blu-ray at home and something like that, but it's almost the sort of thing. I don't know how often I'm going to be popping it in at home, just because that high of seeing that in the theater in the crowd is something that's kind of tough to, you know, be replicated, you know? So that's almost kind of a big screen only enthusiastic crowd exclusive experience for me, you know?
Yeah, you need the crowd for that. The feet stomping, the
yeah.
singing along. I love that.
Yeah. And it's just, man, oh man. You know, again, it just felt like, you know, you were, you know, I've unfortunately never got the chance to see him, you know, live in person, but you know, that environment, you almost feel like you just had, you know, the front row seat to the greatest Prince concert of your entire life, you know.
Man,
so
I wish I could have been there.
Yeah,
that
no, here's the thing. I mean, I feel like we, you know, we play it every now and then. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes up again. And because I've seen it twice there. That was the first time I saw it there. And the time I saw it, you know, later, it was maybe a year or two later, a 4-track mag print. And it was a very, I was like, was that just kind of a lightning in a bottle sort of thing? I'm happy to report when I saw it a second time, it was very similar to that first experience. So yeah.
How do you think the 4-track mag affected it? Do you think it was better?
I mean, It sounded incredible.
Because for me, 4-track mag is too loud.
Too loud.
When I saw Sorcerer, I was actually like holding my ears.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's if it's ever going to be a movie that is appropriate to bust that out, I feel like it would be Purple Rain.
Yeah,
Exactly. So I don't remember this. I mean, I remember it sounding great for both of them, but, you know, to be able to compare, I'm not really sure. I just know both sounded great. But again, if there's ever any level to kind of, you know, really kind of, you know, push the ceiling as far as how loud you should be going, you know, it's during like the last 15 minutes of Purple Rain.
Now, as always, my guest gets to bring their topic to the mic. Jeff, why don't you tell us what we'll be talking about today and why you decided to choose it?
Sure. Well, let me see. I guess the topic involves film marketing. And more importantly, I just have a slight beef within this. Obviously, it doesn't apply to every movie. It's mostly just, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of big Hollywood studio movies lately. But it kind of involves excessive film marketing that... You know, I'm realistic. Movies need to be marketed. You know, you got to let people know what's out there and whatnot. But I find with a lot of movies, somewhat excessive film marketing tends to be at odds with the movie-going experience. And I wish they weren't so mutually exclusive. I wish you could have one without coming at the cost of the other. So I wish that was a little more harmonious. And by that, I just mean with a lot of these movies, you know, like let's say the latest Bond movie, for example, you know, or The Flash, or, you know,
it's kind of really big studio movies.
Yeah. So again, it doesn't apply to everything, but certain things, it's like with when they have these full-fledged trailer campaigns, you know, there's the teaser and then like three full-length trailers, and then when even beyond that, when you get into the TV spots and the internet spots and the billboards and stuff, I find there's almost, if you've seen all that, either, you know, whether you sought it out or just kind of saw stuff passively, I almost feel like there's very little left on the bone, so to speak, for when you're actually in the theater paying to, you know, have that experience. It's like all the best lines, all the best shots, all the best everything. It's, I don't know, you get a very, and even if the stuff in the movie is admittedly cool, because you saw so much of the, you know, the best stuff just on your phone or on your TV or whatever, I just feel like it results in a very diluted version of that on paper intended experience, you know? And so I almost feel like the best compromise would be just to have one well-edited teaser that does not show all its cards, and then just kind of leave it at that, you know? So you're still, you know, you hook people, you're alerting them to the movie, letting them know the accurate vibe and tone of, you know, you're not trying to mislead people or anything like that, but accurately sell the tone of what the experience will be of watching that movie, and then drop the curtain and then leave them wanting more. And just, you know, and there's, I feel like, a lot of examples where, yeah, like I would see that teaser, I'm completely in, it makes me want to see that movie, but I still feel like 98% of that experience is saved for when you're in the theater watching properly. And I kind of feel like movies would do well to kind of keep that in mind, as opposed to just, okay, we care about them buying the ticket and nothing else, a little more respect put on. No, well, let's save something for when people are actually there, you know? But first, it's time for a commercial break.
Vegetarian, but that doesn't mean I can't enjoy a good spice rub. My favorite place to get them is Smoked Bros, a veteran-owned and operated business that sells premium handcrafted dry rubs, spice blends, and seasonings. Psst, guys, you can even put it on your popcorn. My favorites are Honey Badger, because he doesn't give a bleep, and jelly and peanut flavor topping, because some things just taste better together. The website even has recipes, so go check out smokedbros.com to support a veteran-owned and operated business and fill your cabinet with delicious flavor.
And we're back.
And that's our topic for today, excessive film marketing. I'm going to put 30 minutes on our clock, and our time starts now.
Groovy. Awesome.
So before we get into excessive film marketing, do you have like a favorite film that has been marketed, like a campaign that you recall?
Well, let me see. I mean, there were so many. Well, an example I think of, there's a lot of examples of ones where I feel like it was done properly. Maybe my favorite trailer of all time, and I guess it's just the teaser, would be for Alien, the 1979 Ridley Scott film. I mean, if you watch that trailer, you know, there's no dialogue. You know, I mean, again, it's not a cheat. It's just, and every time we play it at the Bev, you know, whenever appropriate, it really brings the house down, you know. Again, it accurately sells the tone. Like that, watching that trailer is very much what it feels like to watch the movie as a whole, but it really doesn't ruin everything. It doesn't let you know really who the main character is, any of the surprises in that movie. It sells the tone. You get a great tagline, always helps, you know, in space, no one can hear you scream. And then boom, you know, you exit, leave nothing more. And it's just, who's not completely in after watching that teaser? But again, 99% of it is still there for you when you go and see the movie. And I just feel like if Alien were to come out today, that restraint would not be there.
No, and it would ruin the movie.
It's true. Like, you know, I'm sure like most of the chestburster scene would be in there.
If not all.
And they would, you know, highlight, oh, okay, Sigourney Weaver's the protagonist. Yeah. And so, you know, when she kind of, you know, naturally emerges as the hero and the protagonist of that movie.
Unexpectedly as the female protagonist.
Completely. Because at first I feel like everyone kind of gets an equal level of screen time in that movie. It's just, this is the crew. It all kind of starts hitting the fan, and then I don't think even she gets naturally any more screen time than anybody else right up front, but then as it all starts to go down, she naturally emerges. Mm-hmm. And again, I just feel like if there were a teaser and, you know, five trailers, all that would just kind of be spelled out for you in a way. And I mean, the movie's still great, but again, you would just get a very diluted version of what the intended experience was, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because like last night when I was watching at the Bev, I saw Spider Baby and the Jack Hill trailers came up, and I've seen Coffee like a billion times.
Yeah.
But even the Coffee trailer kind of shows it all.
I'm remembering back to it. Yeah. it's the trailers that give you like the act one, the act two, the act three. And I mean, yeah, that's great, but it almost kind of makes you wish, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess that for an exploitation film, they have to sell it all.
It's true. On the table. It's like, I do think, I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, the best way to experience a movie, I think, is to, you know, truly go in blind. But I'm almost trying to, you know, I try to be realistic about film marketing, you know, but I do find that, okay, no, one single well-crafted teaser, a nice compromise, you know, without going overboard.
Do you think that like the amount of trailers that are being produced for movies is actually keeping audiences out of theaters because they see so much, they get kind of sick of it, or they kind of get fatigue from it?
I mean, a little bit. I feel like in a way it could kind of backfire because you almost feel like it kind of kills any bit of curiosity if you know there's not much else there, you know? I don't know. And I almost feel like it kind of kills any potential word of mouth too, you know?
And movies are so long nowadays also that it's like they show you so much in the trailer and then it's like, what else? It's just bloated.
Yeah. Like it's, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just frustrating because on paper it seems like, oh my gosh, is it okay if I get into like mild spoilers about The Flash?
Yeah.
Spoiler
alert for The Flash. For the Flash. Anyone really cares about spoilers.
If you haven't
spoilers.
Seen it, and that's
I haven't seen it, and by the way, I don't care.
And that's kind of the whole point is I feel like even if you haven't, you kind of, if you were driving along and you saw a billboard, you're like, oh, okay.
Also, you know? I feel like if you really wanted to see The Flash, you would have seen it by now.
Yeah, it's true. So that's fine. But it's like, I noticed even just during like a Super Bowl, you know, TV spot, which is nothing new, you know, Super Bowl, they always kind of, you know, advertise the big upcoming summer movies and stuff like that. But it's like, we're bringing back like the 1989 Michael Keaton Batman, you know, through some like multiverse, you know, time travel conceit. Okay, whatever, you know, but it's just, you know, on paper, like I'm imagining at this movie's, you know, first conception, it's probably like, wow, you know, they're probably imagining this being a real audience mind-blowing thing. But by the time you get through, okay, casting announcements, Michael Keaton's gonna be in it, okay, you were just on your couch watching the Super Bowl and you saw him say, you know, I'm Batman or whatever, and you're just like, oh, okay, I mean, you sort of had this, oh wow, okay, cool, you know. But isn't that, I feel like you got maybe that very minor, you know, wow factor you got just on your couch watching the Super Bowl was like just a fraction of what it would have been had you truly kind of gone in cold, you know?
I agree.
And more of an effort placed on keeping that wow for the theater. It just enriches the experience as a whole. It makes you would want to tell your friends, you got to see this movie, you're not going to believe it, you know, the stuff that happens. But, you know, again, with the excessive marketing, again, not much meat left on the bone, you know? And it's like, another example would be like The Force Awakens, you know, Star Wars Episode 7. It's like, can you imagine? And I'm not the first person to have brought this up, but it's just a crazy alternate reality to try to picture. It's like, can you imagine a world where you walk into Star Wars Episode 7 not knowing that Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher are in it, you know?
And that would have been exciting. Like, you would have left the theater electric.
Completely. It's like, when they show up, you'd have lost your mind. And, I mean, you know,
especially for super fans of, like, franchises like these.
Yeah, like, I feel like the trailers for those are very good. And I remember, like, the first full-length one, you know, you have Harrison Ford appear at the end. He walks onto the Falcon and it's like, Chewie, we're home. And everyone went, like, whoa, on their phone.
On Twitter. And
yeah.
Like, it's instant gratification.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, again, it's no shade at the editor. I think that trailer gives me goosebumps. It's really great. But it's like, again, we all got to go, wow, when waking up that morning and then watching the trailer on our phone. But wouldn't that wow have been compounded times 1,000 if you truly didn't know? You know, yeah. and were watching in the theater. And it's even as simple as like, okay, even if you didn't watch the trailer, I mean, he's on the billboards everywhere, you know?
He's on the buses, he's on the billboards, it's on your Twitter, it's on your TikTok.
The big standee, even as you're walking into the theater. So I feel like even if, you know, you try to be diligent and stay away from that trailer, it's like, oh, okay, Han Solo's in this. And it's just, you know, you get a very... It's like someone pours you, you know, I don't know, maybe this metaphor is off, but it's like a, you know, a really tall, you know, glass of Coke, but then they fill like 90% of it with water. It's just like, oh, I mean,
you're still getting Coke.
You get, you know, oh, you know, cool, yay. But it's not that it's written as a big reveal. It's shot as like a big reveal, but it doesn't play out like
the
on paper reveal, because it's now something instead of being revealed, it's now something that we're expecting, you know? And it's just, and to me, it's a shame, you know? And that's another example. I think that first Force Awakens teaser is just, you really didn't need to show us any more than that.
Yeah.
It's not a ton of shots. It accurately sells the tone. You see these new characters, these new young characters. One of them's in like a stormtrooper outfit. Oh, crazy. What's that all about?
Like, what is that?
And
like,
then
it makes you interested.
You get one last shot of the Millennium Falcon. Boom. It's like, don't show us anything else. And here's the thing with big franchises like Star Wars, like that, like your Star Wars Episode 7, it will make $1 billion just from that name alone. You know, you have the luxury of not showing all your cards. So for them to that have, although again, admittedly very well edited, these other trailers that then, okay, reveal, you know, here are the people who are in it. And, you know, here's a lot of the surprises. It's just, oh, it's just kind of a shame. You know, you could have made all that money and you could have made... The butts in the seats were guaranteed just because of you being, you know, the next Star
because
Wars.
Because you are Star Wars.
You know, you had, I'm just repeating myself, but yeah, you had that luxury of not showing all your cards and that you choose to sort of play them anyway is just, oh, you know, the experience of watching it was a little lesser for it, I feel.
I think that maybe the excessive marketing is for two reasons. One, I feel like movies, they get announced and they just take so long now to come to actually the screens. And part of that is because of the excessive CGI, in my opinion.
Mm.
Things aren't being done practically anymore. So it's like they aren't being just kind of done on set and then brought to our screens in a timely manner. It's like all of a sudden it's like a year or two in the CGI tank where they have to. So it's like we have to keep pumping up people because that explanation of like, oh, Michael Keaton's going to be in The Flash happened 2 years ago.
It's true. I feel like I heard that first announcement, which is just like, you know, I mean, the reporting is what it is, but that happened so long ago.
It happened so long ago. So maybe they feel like they have to do excessive marketing to keep people interested.
Anytime it sort of
drips
a little bit, we need to revitalize people's interest with a new, you know. And you see some trailers, not that I care so much about like the Fast movies, but it's like I think I saw, you know, but I'm aware when like the new trailer drops, it's like the fourth trailer for Fast X, and I see and it's like 4.5 minutes long. I'm like, why is
the trailer four
I'm
and
like
a half
even if I'm like if I cared like I would not want to watch the, you know, I'm like, the whole movie is probably in there. Like, what could be left after a trailer that long, you know?
And then also the other thing that I think maybe is the cause of excessive marketing is we have the, Star Wars is a really good example of this, mm-hmm. because you have the parents, I'm going to guess they're kind of the parents now of the generation, who grew up watching Star Wars and who want to see Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. They want to see all the old characters that they really love and the old actors.
Yeah.
And then you have the children who are the TikTok generation, mm-hmm. who are experiencing movies in 1 minute on TikTok for the first time.
It's true.
And who need like rapid fire sent to their brains because they have TikTok brain.
And it's just with social media is another thing. I mean, that doesn't necessarily deal with so much how like the studio, although they kind of are, because you know they factor in hashtags into this and that and what you know young people are discussing, but it's just with overeager discussion on social media. I feel like that is because everyone want to in modern times, especially with DVRs and you know streaming, you have the luxury of kind of you know seeing things at your convenience as opposed to
at your pace,
as opposed to the other way around when it was like, okay, this show, for example, is on you know Sundays at 8 o'clock appointment television. Now with technology, we have the luxury of watching it at our convenience. Oh well, I'm working that night, I'll DVR it or I'll just you know stream it when I'm available. But because people on social media are so eager to be part of you know I guess the discourse, so to speak, and talk about shows and the spoilers and the reveals while they're relevant, they don't want to talk about it you know after it's gone stale. But as a result of that, there is almost no grace period for giving people a chance to kind of watch it fresh and not have it spoiled, like without even trying. I'm not on any type of sites even related to certain shows. I've had so many things, you know, some stuff I care about, some stuff I don't, just ruined for me. Just by, you know, even just, you know, if you're on YouTube, you'll see something just pop up on your homepage. I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of annoying. Yeah, I wasn't even looking for that. And it's like, it hasn't even been 12 hours since it premiered. Like, what is people's problem? And it's just because, well, they need to have the discussion while it's relevant because that's what gets the views and gets the clicks and they don't want to talk about it. You know, things move so fast. It's like, oh, well, that happened a week ago. It, you know, it's to the point where there's almost no grace period. So things have kind of come full circle where now, even though we have the technology gives us the luxury of watching things at our convenience. If you don't want stuff ruined for you, we're now back to it kind of being appointment television. No, you need to watch when it premieres because if you wait a second later, it's going to get ruined for you and you won't be able to watch it fresh. So that I find kind of frustrating. I guess the solution is to be to, okay, you can completely cut yourself off and not be online, which, hey, that's great. I'm trying to kind of wean myself off as it is, but it's frustrating if you're just doing, you know, kind of casual stuff online, not even related to the show or the movie you hope to enjoy, and then it just comes out of left field and gets ruined for you because people are overeager.
I think a really good example of a film that has minimal to no marketing right now is the new Hayao Miyazaki film that's coming out. And because I got really afraid, actually, because he did Zero when it was in Japan, but then it premiered in Japan. And I thought, oh my God, am I just going to have spoilers everywhere for this because of this? No, I've seen one trailer pop up and I didn't watch it because I want to go in exactly how he intended us to go in. And I think it's now called The Boy and the Heron. I think it was like You Only Live.
How Do You Live?
How Do You Live? Which I like that title better personally.
I do too. A little more interesting. Yeah. You know, it's like I'm already kind of tearing up.
Yeah, but I have no idea what the movie is and I've kept it that way. And I fear the day that spoilers come for that because I want to come in blind. And I think that when it premieres in the United States, I think it will be flooded with spoilers. I think because in Japan, they probably respect it, or maybe I'm just not on the Japanese internet. But I feel like they've kind of respected it. So like I haven't seen any that cross over like onto my social media yet of that, but man, he did that really great.
I think that's so gangster. It's just like it's
that's a good way to put it. Gangster.
It's his last movie. It's just, you know, especially,
actually it's not anymore. Apparently, well, he's not retired.
Well, like it's with everything else, just from what we just discussed, it's so, you know, unusual where it's just like my last movie. Yeah, like you get the title, kind of one vague poster image,
vague poster, which and, like, doesn't even look like the animation
that's
style.
It. It's just like, you know, no trailer. I mean, they've since, okay, there's a trailer and there's some stills out now. But like when I was like, oh, like that's so awesome, you know? And it's almost better where it's like, again, you know, for the real like Studio Ghibli Miyazaki fans where it's like, you know, you essentially have their ticket. You have
that's
their money.
Exactly, just like Marvel or Star Wars.
Movie, his first movie in 10 years, his supposedly, you know, I mean, God bless him, he keeps on retiring. I hope he keeps
never
doing
retire.
So. It's like Spirited Away was supposed to be his last. Ponyo.
Well, it's
and then
it was
Wind
this
Rises.
Whole thing with his business partner and his son, because his business, someone was supposed to take over the company and then they passed away. And so then he couldn't.
I don't think I knew that. That's
so he couldn't give the company. And then he was kind of training his son a little bit. Mm-hmm. A lot of people really hate on Goro and his movies. I don't. I love Goro's movies.
I liked, what was it? Up from Up on Poppy Hill.
Okay, I even like Earwig. Everyone hates on Earwig. I like Earwig. I'm an Earwig
fan. That's funny. I haven't seen that one.
I like him, just as a quick aside, I like him because he's actually a student of Takanaka. So he's not Miyazaki's, even though he's his dad, he's not like a student of him. And so when you track Takanaka's work versus Goro's work, it's really interesting to see the parallels.
And that's another different flavor of just, you know, that,
of Studio Ghibli. That's what I love.
I saw that. It was the first time I saw From Up on Poppy Hill, and it was actually the first time of seeing Grave of the Fireflies as well. It was a double.
Oh my God.
I know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to kill the mood just by bringing that up, but it was a double.
Wow, a double
the,
of
it
that.
Was a double at the Arrow years ago of Grave of the Fireflies and From Up on Poppy
Which
Hill.
Which one played first?
Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh my gosh.
Which I feel like is probably the right call. And I honestly, because I think I did get up, you know, early the next morning. It was not my intention to stay for both movies. But Grave of the Fireflies, it was one of those movies I'm sure I would think it was a great film, but I kept on putting off because I heard of just kind of, you know, I had this reputation of being, you know, such like sad, you know, sadness porn, so to speak.
Yeah.
And just being like, man, you know, you really get just gotta, you know, it's tough to find yourself to be in the mood to have, you know, your whole day ruined. And so, but you know, it was playing at a theater I loved when I was free. It was on my watch list. I was like, no, let's be brave and pull the trigger. I'm doing it tonight, you know, and then, you know, I have to get up early. I'll only stay for the first film, you know, and I would have been, I guess, a little more self-conscious about, you know, sobbing openly, you know, in a theater of like 200 people or whatever. If literally everyone else in the room wasn't also audible, you know, you just bleh, you know, everyone was losing it. And it wasn't just crying. It was like, it felt like, you know, hot pokers were being stuck in your eyes. It was like, I hadn't sobbed that like hard and openly in a very long time.
It's
and
cathartic.
Again, I'd be a little more completely. And again, would have been a little more self-conscious about it if, you know, literally everyone else around me wasn't having the same experience. And again, the plan was to go home. I was like, well, I need something to kind of bring me back up, you know, something a little lighter, a little fluffier, you know, a little more feel good before I, you know, drive off into the night. And so, you know, I sucked it up and I stayed for both, and I'm glad I did. And so, you know, I was like, you know, thank you, Goro Miyazaki.
Yeah, thank you.
You brought me back to life, you know?
Fathom Events every year does like Ghibli Fest. Mm-hmm. And I actually do like just popping in and just seeing one, because for me, it's nostalgic. I prefer to see the Ghibli movies personally dubbed versus in sub, because I watched them dubbed as a kid. So it's really nostalgic for me.
Yeah, completely.
But I brought my godfather. He had never seen Totoro. And oh my brought him to go see Totoro, just because I had an extra ticket, and he went and he just cried like the entire time. And Totoro, I had never thought of it as sad. It's really sad.
It has, I mean, it's the weird thing with Totoro. I mean, yeah, like completely. It's both, because I mean, it's obviously such a delightful and happy movie, but there's this kind of, you know,
well, the sickness with the mother.
This undercurrent, you know, just kind of running, just this strand of sadness kind of running just beneath the surface.
That all this
joy, you know, is going to come to an end. And even though, you know, and then the sister gets lost, and you know, even though things work out, it's just sort of like that reminder that in life things could easily go the other way. And it's just like, no, like you said it, as you know, it's thought of on the surface as this very happy movie, and you know, yes, that's accurate, but there is that also that level to it.
I think
a
lot of his movies are sad, like Kiki's Delivery Service. The whole point of that movie is it's okay to be sad.
Oh my God, like Kiki's Delivery, I mean, it's great at any age, you know, but man, you know, I think I rewatched it when, you know, the last time we played it at the Bev, we played it in the dub, and it's just like that movie hits you so hard as an adult too, you know, like that is a real movie, extremely relatable, you know.
Do you have a favorite Ghibli?
If I had to pick, probably Princess Mononoke.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Again, a lot of that's nostalgic. I saw that at a really great age, and that was kind of my introduction to that style animation and Miyazaki and all that. But man, you know, I have a soft spot for so many of them. A very close number two might be The Wind Rises. Speaking of, you know, Miyazaki retiring, it feels like such a final
his
film.
Story,
I'm so glad he's returning, but it's like if that were his final movie, it
would have been understandable.
It's the perfect mic drop, you know. And that's, speaking of sobbing, you know, I think I saw that twice in the theaters 10 years ago when it came out. And you know, the first time I saw it, I, you know, wept like a child at the end, and I was like, well, you know, was I just, you know, maybe in a particular mood that day or whatever? And then I think I saw it the second time and had the exact same reaction. It was like, nope, this movie's just, you know,
it's just that good.
Yeah, it's just that good. And again, and it's not that it's necessarily the, you know, the sadness you know, porn or the horrors that, you know, Grave of the Fireflies is. And I don't say that dismissively. That's a beautiful movie. But it's just, Wind Rises is a different kind of, where it's just, it's such a beautiful movie that you're moved to tears. Yeah. You know, at least for me.
I think my favorite is Porco Rosso, for sure. Absolutely. I like all of his stuff.
What a good double feature that would be. That's all, perfect. Like, the Wind Rises.
Come on, Bev. Come on.
The Wind Rises, exactly. And our Ghibli stuff always does well. Really good numbers. We just played Howl. That did great. But yeah, Porco Rosso and The Wind Rises, I think, would be, you know, perhaps on the nose, but I just think maybe just a bullseye double feature.
I don't know if it would be on the nose. I mean, I think it's great that it's like this director who like loves airplanes, and I love directors who love airplanes, like George R. Hill and stuff. Like, we've talked about that, like, with Quentin.
I was so happy, I think, when you guys brought up like Porco Rosso.
Yeah, because, well, that's, how can I not bring up Porco Rosso?
Porco Rosso is so great. Like, and that would be such a good double feature. I mean, again, enjoyable for all ages, but one, you know, geared, okay, maybe a little more towards young, and then here's his, you know, kind of adult version.
Yeah.
I'm also, like, not to sound pretentious, but my favorite version of Porco Rosso is the French dub.
That actually is the best one.
Yeah, like, and I think, I forget what hipped me to it, but I think Miyazaki himself had, like, highly recommended that.
I think,
and then
he did.
When I found out that Jean Reno, the actor from, you know, Leon the Professional, that he was Porco, I was like, that is such bullseye voice casting. It's just, he is the character is him. You know, there's the whole, like, pig element with the oven mitt in Leon. I was like, oh my God. Perfect. And so I watched it. And so for me, they're all great. I probably, you know, would go, like, if I were to rank them, French, Japanese, English, they're all great. But, like, the French is probably my favorite way to watch that. And it almost seems more appropriate for the setting, too.
I love it when a director of anything is like, this is the dub you should watch.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite mangas or anime is Yu Yu Hakusho. Oh, I don't know if you've ever seen it. But
I have. That's one I haven't seen every episode of.
Yeah, but I think I've only seen like the first arc like 10 times. Uh-huh. Because I just keep rewatching. Because it's like my childhood.
Is that one that has like a tight 26 episodes? Or is that it has like, no, there's like 900 episodes
I
if you want.
I think there are like 900 episodes if you want. Yeah. But I think, I don't know. I haven't seen like all of them. But the creator actively says, because Kuwabara's voice acting in the English dub is so good, you should watch the English dub.
Nice.
And I'm like, great, because that's what I grew up watching. And it's perfect. Iconic to me, so perfect.
Yeah. Some of them, it varies. Some of them I prefer in Japanese. Some of them I prefer English. You know, like Mononoke, again, that's the one I grew up with, but I think that has a really strong voice cast.
Well, I think the Spirited Away, I think in English, is annoying, personally.
Yeah, and that one, is the kind of...
there's a lot of yelling in it.
That one's kind of the reverse. That one, I mean, again, I'm happy to watch it under any circumstance. But Spirited Away, if I had my choice, that one I would watch in Japanese.
Yeah,
so like, I don't come down hard on either side. It's just kind of, circumstantial by movie. But
So now that, I mean, we've seen like a franchise, like, well, not franchise, we've seen Ghibli, that they've done like a no marketing campaign, and then you have Marvel, who's like kind of just laying it all out
there, over the top.
Do you think that Marvel will ever not market as much, or do you think they're just gonna keep marketing?
I mean
they're also putting like Fortnite and Taco Bell in their movies, they're putting like, I'm gripping my head right now.
I heard something, it's just the way everything's kind of interconnected, not that I'm like a full-on expert of it, it's just me, you know, speaking from my experience as a moviegoer. I heard that with Star Wars Episode 9, the last one, The Rise of Skywalker, it was like there was something, you know, crucial connected to the plot of that movie, maybe with how like Palpatine comes back, or how he has like 10,000 Star Destroyers or something like that, in a way that if you just watch the movie doesn't make sense. But that was like a Fortnite unlockable that, and I'm dead serious, that like if you played Fortnite and I don't know if you watched the Fortnite cutscene. Yeah, like I don't know if you had to spend money or not, but the point is, this will make sense if you play this game tie-in. And it's like I'm sorry, I'm not doing that.
That's for the TikTok generation. Yeah, as a proud Fortnite player,
I shouldn't have to do all this homework if I'm going to see a movie. I just feel like you should be able to go watch the movie, having not seen anything, if you so choose, and have a fresh, complete experience. And there can be stuff to look up afterward. Oh, okay, but you can't have just a big question mark over your head because I didn't play Fortnite. Like, I didn't play Fortnite and I never will. I should still be able to understand
the movie,
what's going on in Rise of Skywalker. And I feel like that's a failure of... I mean, and you know, I don't even say that's a failure of the filmmakers. It's no shade to all the talented people who worked on that movie, but it's just the way the marketing of all that is constructed. I just think it does a disservice to the experience.
Exactly.
You know?
Do you find that when you know something that's happening in the trailer, that you're sitting there waiting for it to happen then in the movie? like the big reveal? Like, you're like, when is he going
to
show up?
No, completely. It's like, I mean, going back to that Han Solo thing, it's like, if just, you know, again, it's shot as a reveal, but anyone who saw that trailer, it's not played as a reveal. And I know the experience of what it should have been, because I have this really nice memory. My sister, she is, you know, not, you know, and she's all the better for it. She's not really on film Twitter at all, so to speak. And she's a big Star Wars fan. I grew up with, you know, watching it with her and that sort of thing. And so we all saw, you know, Force Awakens together over the holidays. And, you know, she's a little more, you know, again, not she doesn't really watch trailers. She doesn't really engage with any of that, you know, as much as I
do. She's just a fan.
And so she's just a fan. And so she's getting a fresher experience. So the point is, those images were not burned in her brain going into it as much as they were mine. And so as a result of that, I'm sitting next to her watching The Force Awakens. And, you know, Carrie Fisher shows up, Princess Leia. And my sister gasps. You know, she... You know, and it's just like,
and so I mean, I wish that could have been me.
Yeah, and it's like, I wish that could have been me. Like, I knew she was in the movie. I don't know. Maybe my sister had heard about it, but had since forgotten it, or, and you know, and she certainly hadn't pored over the trailers or anything like that. And so she shows up, and my sister gasps, and I'm like, see, that's. But I feel like she's the minority. I feel like she's the 2% of the people, my sister being one of them, got to have that.
Big moment.
Of us got to go, you know, yay. But it wasn't anything we didn't see coming, you know, because we knew she was going to be in it. So, no, I mean, completely. So, in short, maybe I need to, you know...
No,
follow
I
my
mean,
sister's online habits
impossible.
And just be less on the radar.
Well, especially with your job, though. I feel like it's impossible not to be a part of it.
If you're connected to it at all, it's very tough to avoid.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
Or if people you're connected with are connected to it, just like the way that things get sent to you.
Completely.
But it's so funny because I just remembered I had like that experience, but like the opposite, because when I took my parents and my brother to go see Spider-Verse, Spider-Verse 2, I was spoiled that I knew it was a part one.
Okay.
But my parents did not.
Yeah.
But they were not happy that it was a part one.
Like, what?
Literally at the end, my dad was like, what the? Like, what? It's part one? Like, I just sat through all of this.
I guess it's a testament to that movie, though, because here's the thing. I sort of had both versions of that. I knew it was a part one going into it, but then I was so absorbed in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to how great that movie is that about maybe 2/3 of the way through, I legitimately forgot until sort of just as the movie was wrapping up, I was like, you know, it's not a short movie. It had been going on. And I was like, there's a lot of big stuff happening for all this to kind of be like wrapped up anytime. So, oh, it's a part one, isn't it? You know, well, like, and so I had known that the movie had absorbed me enough that I forgot. And then I re-remembered, so it all kind of went full circle. But ideally, you know, yeah, I can see why your group would have been,
And when I went to go see Fast 10 or Fast X or whatever, I didn't know it was a part one. I just went into the movie blind, and I was like, what is going on here? How are they going to wrap all this up? And then it's like part one, and it's like, I don't know if you've seen the movie.
I haven't. I tapped out after 8, but yeah.
Fast X almost...
Feel free to spoil it.
If you had seen it in theaters, it's almost worth it. There's like this crazy scene where it's like CGI, and they go like from the kids head like into the engine.
Is it when he's driving down the dam and it's exploding and it goes into the car,
which by the way is the last shot of the movie? And
really,
and did they show it in the trailer?
You know, that's something, again, that's one of those
they must have, because you haven't seen it.
I haven't pored over all those trailers. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but that's one I saw just through, again, the discourse. I saw that scene on, you know, Twitter without even me seeking it out. So I know exactly the shot you mean, you know, but...
When you're making the trailers for the BEV, because I assume that you have to be really careful not to give away too many spoilers for movies, but you have to get people interested that have seen the movies and people who have interest that haven't seen the movies.
That's a good point. I mean, it's a tricky line to walk because, I mean, we're repertory, you know, I mean, it's not like we're playing, you know, I mean, every now and then we play like a newish movie, but...
Like last night it's Soho played. And
exactly. And so for stuff like that, I try to be a little more conscious of it. Like, okay, don't reveal anything that hasn't already been revealed. So, you know, last night in Soho, maybe, okay, use only shots that have, you know, only been in the trailer.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, that makes sense.
And not that trailers don't reveal stuff, but I feel like those,
but at least they have the liberty to reveal.
Those were very smart in what they chose, you know, not to show too much. And so, you know, something that the filmmakers at least had decided to, oh no, this is okay.
Yeah.
You know, but so, yeah, I try not. Stuff I feel like would be, I try to almost have that conversation if someone were to go, you know, spoiler alert, if that person in my mind would seem unreasonable by bringing up a spoiler for like, you know, a 50-year-old movie or something like that. But I'm also trying to be respectful. If I feel like that would be unrealistic to expect to remain completely spoiler free for a movie that well known or that, you know, old. If it would be unrealistic for a person to get upset about spoilers, I feel fine kind of, you know,
showing it,
kind of showing this and that. But at the same time, that is something I keep in mind for, because, you know, we get a lot of younger people at the BEV too, who, you know, just by the sheer nature of their age, are seeing these movies for the first time, which is great. You know, we're not trying to
assume. But are the trailers, though, are they for people that have seen the movies? Because you kind of get to pick out, like, oh, I see that, I see this, I see that. So it's almost like you have to see the movies to understand what's in the trailers.
A little bit of both. Some stuff, you know, I try to make, you know, and Captain Obvious about it, like, you couldn't confuse this movie for anyone else. But then there's others. It's almost like varying levels of difficulty. Like, okay, you know, if you see, you know, Neo dodging bullets in slow motion,
you know it's the Matrix.
Okay, gee, I wonder what this is. But then I sort of get to have fun with something that's like a little more obscure, and then maybe just like one random shot from it. And then it's great, because then if I read the comments, right, you know, hear people discussing it, and if I see people, is that so-and-so? It's almost like, it's kind of cool to kind of... It's kind of cool to just almost give them those brownie points, you know, where it's like, I can't believe the person got that movie from that one obscure shot.
You know, it's a true fan then, and they will be in the front row.
Yeah, completely. So I not that it's a calculated mathematical decision, but I do try to keep both those perspectives in mind, you know, when cutting.
And that is all the time that we have for today. Jeff, is there any final thought that you would like to leave with the listeners?
Yeah, I guess just to wrap it up regarding, you know, the excessive film marketing thing, you know, it's like, especially as I get older, you know, you're really trying to keep that, you know, inner child of you alive that, you know, finds the movie going experience magical. And, you know, some of the, you know, like, again, imagine if, you know, you went into Star Wars not knowing that, you know, Han Solo was in it, you know, the new one. It's like, that's the kind of high, you know, like that my sister got to experience that I just described. You know, that's the kind of high I'm trying to, you know, capture and live in when I'm going to the movies, especially nowadays. And so I wish the marketing people would try to show a little more respect for that experience when, you know, rolling out what they do, in the interest of, you know, preserving a little bit of that movie magic, kind of the idea of, you know, sometimes less is more, you know, kind of quality over quantity. And again, I would say perfect examples for what I'm talking about: watch the teaser for The Force Awakens, the teaser for Inception, The Shining, The Thing, Alien. And if you just show no more than that, I feel like that's the perfect compromise to market the movie while still respecting the movie-going experience.
That's it for today. Thank you so much to Jeff for coming on the show. If you don't already follow Jeff on his Instagram and Twitter at Jeff Smith Here, I would say do so, because seeing the monthly BEV sneak peeks is one of the highlights of my month, honestly, because I love seeing how he edits all the clips together with the music, and it really gets me hyped to see some stuff old and new to me. I'm Gala Avery, and this has been The Gala Show.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
The Gala Show is brought to you by Insert-O-Matic. This episode was executive produced by Roger Avery and produced by Gala Avery. Music composed by Andy Milburn. As always, I'm your host, Gala Avery. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Despite me sharing the same last name with this charity, I don't have any affiliation with it, besides the fact the issue is very near and dear to my heart. Did you know that in the United States, 2.7 million children currently have a parent in prison, and it's estimated that 10 million children have experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives? I was one of these kids, and as an adult, I am really grateful to be able to give back to Project Avery. Their mission is to build leadership from within by supporting community through programs such as mentoring and outdoor education, and also to remove the stigma surrounding having a parent that's incarcerated. You don't have to feel alone. If you know a kid who could use these resources or would like to donate money or time to the charity, please go to Project Avery, that's AVARY.org, to check out what this amazing charity is all about. Again, that's ProjectAvery.org. Thank you guys, from the bottom of my heart.